أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. لا أقسم بهذا البلد وأنت حل بهذا البلد ووالد وما ولد لقد خلقنا الإنسان في كبد بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم لا أقسم بها البلد وأنت حل بهذا البلد ووالد وما ولد لقد خلقنا الإنسان في كبد أيحسب أن لن يقدر عليه أحد يقول أهلكت مالا لبدا أيحسب أن لم يره أحد ألم نجعل له عينين ولسانا وشفتين وهديناه النجدين ألم نجعل له عينين ولسانا وشفتين وهديناه النجدين فلاقتحم العقبة وما أدراك ما العقبة فك رقبة أو إطعام في يوم ذي مسغبة يتيما ذا مقربة أو مسكينا ذا متربة ثم كان من الذين آمنوا وتواصوا بالصبر وتواصوا بالمرحمة
Recited by different qurra in different styles and different recitation, and it affects the heart because it is the kalam of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala must give us an understanding of the Quran Sharif and the tawfiq of amal. Now this afternoon we have announced Q&A, meaning question and answers, not quarrels and arguments. Generally these days, I always mention, Q&A means quarrels and arguments. People want to argue, then they start asking questions. So questions must be asked with the niyat of learning, getting to know, and then making amal. It is not just for entertainment. I mentioned, I think, before also, that nobody can also claim to have answers to everything. If anyone claims that he has answers to all questions, then it is a false claim. How can a person know or have answers to everything? Great, great scholars have had to say that we will make a research and let you know. Imam Shafi'i Rahmatullah Alayhi once in the Haram Sharif, it was not a claim that he was making that he knows everything, but he just said that if anybody wants to know anything, find out. I will answer your questions. So one person got up and said that when Hazrat Adam Alayhi Salatu Wasalam made his 10th Hajj or 6th Hajj, then what was the name of the barber who shaved his head after the tuf? No. So Imam Shafi'i Rahmatullah said, wife, my claim or my announcement was incorrect, that I will answer all your questions. Now who is going to know what was the barber's name? Or in any case, gee, anybody wants to ask anything? The question is that there are so many different jam'iyats, there are so many different muftis, so many different organizations, so many different fatawa, that's what he's trying to say. So what do we do in such a case? As far as organizations are concerned, it's my opinion, personal opinion, that at present we have more organizations than the number of people in the world. Because every person is an organization himself. There are so many organizations, every day a new one. And instead of working together, or instead of creating more avenues for people to learn, to educate themselves, to get to know, and to make amal on it, more and more division is being created. So now that was not the purpose of having more and more organizations. One thing is certain and definite, that all the work cannot be done by one organization, and we are not like the Sahaba Ikram radiallahu anhum ajma'in or some great people of the past who were able to do everything. They were mujahids on the one hand, they were mufassir making tafsir of the Quran Sharif, they were from the muhaddithin, they were also jurists and sometimes qazis, and they were also writing and publishing. Now we don't have that kind of capacity. We will say that it's a question of distribution of labor, as they call it. Different people will do different kinds of works. Some people will be engaged in da'wat and tabligh, some will be in madrasa, some in khanqa, some doing writing and publication. But all of them must consider the others as supplementary, complementary. In whichever way we can assist and help the others, we should help. And if we cannot do much, then make dua for them. But we should not keep looking for faults and weaknesses and shortcomings, and then blow them out of all proportions, and then create more and more friction in the ummah, and more disunity. So with regards to the question, what should we do? What else can we do but to do the same thing that we would do if two attorneys are differing in their opinion, whether we should go ahead with the case or not? People go to the attorneys, they choose two attorneys, three attorneys, or they choose one and then they say get a second opinion, third opinion. But the fact is that if a person is told by one of the attorneys or senior counsel that you have a good case, and the other one says that no, you have a very poor case, so what must we do? Do we call it off, or do we then make a choice? But like that you won't find an attorney that will say you don't have a good case. Every attorney will say you have a very, very good case, because his suitcase will get filled after that. So therefore you won't find any attorney saying that you don't have a good case. So one attorney sent a bill to one of his clients. So when he looked at it, there were some extra charges there. So he telephoned him and asked him, what are all these extra charges for? He said, last night I dreamt of your case and I spent quite a bit of time over it. In any case, so the attorneys, they differ. The judges, they differ. The doctors, they have different opinions. Sometimes you go to one cardiologist, he says must go for a bypass. And you go to another one, he says no, we can do with an angioplast, or we can put a stent. The same with all other sicknesses and diseases. One eye specialist says something, the other one says something. Now in all these cases, we don't give up the eye specialist, we don't give up the cardiologist, we don't give up those judges and those attorneys. We all make a choice. Allah Ta'ala has given us intelligence, we make a choice. We look around, we find out from people that who do you think is a person that is reliable, trustworthy, the person who has got taqwa in his life, the person is not being bought off, because this is a world where you can buy off ulama, you can buy off muftis, you can buy off judges, you can buy off anybody today. So you establish that this person is not one who is bought off by some government or by some organization for their own gain, or by some companies for their own gain. That mufti, that alim, we come to a conclusion that he is a person of credibility. Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala has blessed him with istighna, meaning that his sole trust is in Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. He will not mislead, misdirect, misguide. And together with that, he also has in-depth knowledge of the issue on hand. Sometimes a person can be very sincere, but it is not necessary that his sincerity is a certificate of his knowledge. An alim can be very sincere, but he hasn't that in that knowledge that a true mufti or a true qazi or a true scholar of deen should have. The person's knowledge is superficial. He has just studied a few kitabs and come to conclusions. Or sometimes he hasn't even studied the kitabs in depth. He just reads some risala, some magazine, some publication and says, this is the fatwa that appeared in that magazine. So now that is not a mufti who just reads some publication and say that this is a fatwa. So Allah Ta'ala has given us intelligence. We can understand. When it comes to business, we are very sharp. In business matters, we are very sharp. If a person just comes and says, give me 100,000 rand worth of goods, yeah, we don't just give it. Or even 10,000 worth, we don't just give it. We check. So we are very sharp when it comes to that. So like that, when it comes to the selection or a choice of a mufti, of a, then there too we have to be careful. We have to see the person's lifestyle. We have to see whether people have benefited in general from his rulings, or he has created more problems because of his lack of knowledge on certain issues. So if we are satisfied that this person is acknowledged by the great ulama of the time as being a reputable mufti, that is the yardstick that we will use for measuring, not our own intelligence. It's not sufficient sometimes. Or not just finding out from our wives and our children, what you think of that mufti sahab. So then the wife gives her opinion, our child gives his opinion. We will look at what do the people of the time, what do the scholars of that time, what do the ulama of that time have to say with regards to that particular mufti or that particular alim. If they say that he has in-depth knowledge, he has got taqwa, and he has got the reputation of guiding correctly, so then we must follow that mufti. We must follow his rulings for the purposes of the akhirat in the eye of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. Then we will not be guilty of any offense and of any crime and sin, even if that fatwa of that mufti sahab was not correct, because we made a proper choice. Now that mufti sahab, if he made a mistake, then it is between him and Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. But if he realizes that he made a mistake, then it was his duty to then inform that I erred, I made a mistake. Every human being can make a mistake. Great, great muftis and great, great imams have withdrawn their fatawa, or they have changed their ruling when new information came to light. Many a times, the information was not sufficient on which that whole ruling was based. And then when new information came to light, they gave a new ruling. So if a person is reputable, then he will in himself inform that it was due to incorrect information that I had, or it was insufficient information, therefore I gave a certain ruling, but that ruling was incorrect. So therefore those who have practiced upon that ruling must now change. So that is what a reputable mufti will do. And there is no sin in it, and there is nothing to feel ashamed about it. But if that mufti was not reputable, and if he didn't have taqwa, so then after realizing his mistake, he will still hide it. So then that shows that the choice was not correct. But in any case, for the public, for the people at large, that is the only way to go about it, that there will be different organizations, different jam'iyats, different muftis giving different fatawa. So at that time, choose the mufti that you have full confidence. It must not be based on any other criteria. It must not be based on the fact that just because he is my sheikh, just because he is my mentor, or just because he is my uncle, or because he is my friend, or because we go fishing together, so therefore I must accept his fatawa, even though he may be fishing me out. So it doesn't mean that. The choice must be based solely on the pleasure of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, and that we want to make amal, so therefore we are choosing. That's all. Then there will be differences, and it will continue. In the Sahaba-e-Kiram radiyallahu anhum ajma'in, they had differences. Aimmaya Mujtahideen, Imam Abu Hanifa Rahmatullah Ali, Imam Shafi, Imam Malik, Imam Ahmad in Hanbal, and so many others. Look at the number of differences of opinion they have had. Because one is the Quran Sharif and Hadith Sharif, in which there is a clear-cut ruling, then of course nobody can differ. But when it is open, it's a mujtahid fi mas'ala. So there will be differences of opinion. And the difference of opinion is a rahmat and a mercy for the ummah. If everybody had been tied down to one posture and one way, it would have become very difficult in many issues. But when it comes to the masail of buying, selling, transactions and many other things, and even when it comes to the masail of nikah, talaq and those things which do not have a nasiqati or clear-cut ruling. So there are lots of differences of opinion and there is great rahmat in that. There's great mercy of Allah Ta'ala in that. So those people, they had the differences, but those differences did not lead them to quarrels and arguments. That's what I was saying, Q&A. They did not start fighting, they did not start condemning, rejecting. This person has become murtad, that person has become kafir, this person has become out of the pale of Islam just because he differed on some mas'ala, which was based, the ruling was based on the Quran and Sunnah. Both had their views, both had their dalail and their proofs, both had their arguments. So then at such a time we cannot condemn this one or that one. All we can say is that follow the one that you have confidence on. But then after that don't keep jumping from here to there. Anywhere you find anything easy, then we say this Mufti Sahib is the best Mufti Sahib, because see, on this issue he has given this ruling. And then on another issue, when he gives a very stiff and a hard ruling, then he says, no, this Mufti Sahib is very difficult, now jump to another one. Or one mas'ala we take and go by half a dozen different people. Then that is nafs, that we just want something to suit our nafs. Imam Abu Hanifa Rahmatullah Ali, he had students of his who differed with him, disagreed with him on certain issues. He did not chase them out. He didn't disrespect them. He gave them whatever respectability was deserved. In fact, Hanafiyat really spread from Imam Muhammad Rahmatullah Ali and Imam Yusuf Rahmatullah Ali, who were the students of Imam Abu Hanifa Rahmatullah Ali. But they differed with him on many issues. So many mashayikh, their murids differed with them. Now because there's nafs, the shaykh too has got his nafs, the murid got his nafs, the mufti has got his nafs, the people that are asking fatawa and making istifta, they got their nafs. Everybody is asking for the pleasure of the nafs, our egos, our own passions. We just want to prove a point against somebody. So then, even if something is halal, first we will take it to be haram. And then somehow if we can force it and make it into halal, we'll make it. Now that is not Islam. If a thing is halal, it is halal. If it is haram, it is haram. And in between, if there's mushtabahat, then we should try and stay away from it. But we should not, just because we want to prove a point, then make everything haram first, and then somehow, if somebody has made it halal, then we have some argument. So in all issues, there will be differences of opinion. We must learn to tolerate differences of opinion. If we cannot learn to tolerate differences of opinion, then there will be nothing in the society except chaos, disorder, friction, fights and arguments. And that is what we are witnessing now. So many people, they ask me, well, now on a certain issue, your opinion is this, but another organization or another Mufti Sahib or somebody else has given this opinion. So what do I do? I will tell them, follow whoever you think you have confidence on. And there is no need to follow me even if you are my murid. On Masail Fiqhiya, there you follow the Mufti of your choice. Come and ask me Islahi Masail, then there I will tell you, listen to me and do what I am telling you to do. Because that is for the islah of your nafs. And if you have chosen a person as your shaykh, so then you must consider him to be anfa, the most beneficial, with regards to masail of islah. But with regards to other masail, other rulings, then there it is not necessary to even follow the Shaykh. The Shaykh must give the murids that kind of concession or flexibility, that the person must be able to follow a mufti of his choice when it comes to masail of namaz, roza, zakat, hajj, nikah, talaq, whatever. In fact, you must tell them, go and ask some mufti sahab and follow. So there are many things like that. So ikhtilaf will remain. Ikhtilaf we cannot do away with. And if we have to say that must do away with all kinds of differences of opinion, then it means that we are stupid, we are foolish. Or we are telling the world that everybody is foolish and stupid, only I am the learned person. Because my view is the only correct view, and nobody else's view is correct. Now how can that be true? There will be differences of opinion, but those differences must be based on the Quran and the Sunnah of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. We have Quran Sharif, we have Sunnah, we have Ijma, we have Qiyas. Now all these things the Muftis know, the Ulama know. If an ordinary person who has just read a few books in English on Islam, or he has just read a few books in Urdu, the person doesn't know even Mubtada Khabar. He doesn't know Fail, Fail, Maful, nothing. Arabic, he doesn't even know one word. He just read some books in English and in Urdu. And after that, if he comes and starts an argument and says, no, in my opinion this, my opinion that, then we will tell that person that first go and study. Even though the books of law are in English, but none of us has the right to go to the court and say that I'm going to fight the case as a senior counsel, because I've read all the books that the senior counsel has read. Even if a person reads all the books that the senior counsel has read, and our understanding is a little more even than that senior counsel, then too we won't be given that opportunity. Constitutional courts, who goes and fights the cases there? And other courts. Medicine, the same thing. If we go and start arguing with a cardiologist, no, in my opinion it is this, in my opinion that, what will he say? He say, well then you rather take the knife and slice your own heart and put yourself right, because you have your own opinions. So you can slice your own chest and sort out your heart problem. So just reading the books is not sufficient. We know that together with the reading of the books, there has to be an ustad, there has to be a teacher, the person has to learn. He must get the knowledge from the source. So then their differences of opinion are acceptable. But at present in our society, it's a difference of opinion means that everybody has got an opinion. In my opinion it should be this, in my opinion that. Now those opinions we can hold if it comes to wuzu khana, whether we should put a tap on this side or on that side. Whether we must put the water cooler inside the sehen section or in the wuzu khana section. Whether we should have 10 fans here or 5 fans here. Whether the carpet should be of this color or that color. Now those things we can take the opinions of everybody. Whoever is an expert in that field, take his opinion. Nothing wrong with that. When it comes to engineering, when it comes to electricity and wiring, and when it comes to architecture and designing, and when it comes to all other issues like that. So they, whoever is an expert in that field, then take his opinion. That has got nothing to do with Quran and Sunnah. We will only direct them, this is Islamically correct or not. For example, if he's an architect and now he is designing the masjid and he's making the qibla in the other direction of the masjid. This masjid, qibla is in this direction, northeast we face. But now the person who is designing, he is a non-Muslim, he doesn't know about designing of masajid. So he made our qibla in another direction, in the opposite direction. So there we will tell him that, look, this is wrong. Although we may not be architects and we may not be designers, but there we can say that, look, this is wrong. How can you make namaz in the opposite direction? Because now that became an issue of Islam and Sharia and Quran and Sunnah. So there we will give our, not only opinion, but we will force him to change it in the other direction, bring it in the Qibla direction. But in other matters now, if he is telling you that, for purposes of ventilation it should be like this, or for this reason or that reason this building should be constructed in this way or that way, then we'll take their views, we'll take their opinions. But they must not come and then give opinions when it comes to Quran and Sunnah. So differences of opinion is a fact. It will remain, and it was from the time of the companions, and it will remain till Qiyamah. But we must not make it an issue of argument, fight, quarrel, if it is between ulama who are respected, who have knowledge, and who have amal, who have taqwa, and if they are differing, so then we must say, well, alhamdulillah, that is his view, and this is the view of the other ulama who are also people of taqwa, piety, but they have come to this conclusion, so if you want to follow that, good luck to you, and if you want to follow this one, good luck to you. Finish. Samjhe? Just a little more. This morning a person came and gave, he says, Molna, you're having Q&A. So I want to know whether I can give talaq in the month of Ramadan. Because my father is saying that I must give my wife talaq. So if you can answer my question. In the first place, why talk about talaq in the month of Ramadan? It's a month of Ramadan for talaqs. Talk about reconciliation, talk about overlooking, forgiving, generosity, kindness, cooling down our tempers, extinguishing that fire of hatred that is burning in our hearts. Talk about those things. But at the same time, as I discussed in my Jumu'ah Bayan, that injustice is something that is not tolerated by Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. So just because father is saying must give talaq, must the husband just give talaq? They quote Hazrat Umar radiallahu ta'ala that he told his son to divorce his wife. Now, Hazrat Umar radiallahu ta'ala, no, a person like us, could he have had any kind of material reasons or selfish reasons for telling his son to give talaq to his wife? There was genuine reason. And ours is just nothing but dunya purposes. So it's not even necessary for the son to obey the father in such a matter. Sometimes the wife is saying that she wants to have a separate living quarter. And by separate living quarter, we don't mean a palace. At least a room and a kitchen where she can be have her independence. If she's asking for that, it is her right. So now if the father or mother are saying, just divorce her, we can get another one. Onions, potatoes are cheap in the market. So the person doesn't have to divorce because the father or mother have said. But if there's a valid reason, then they're just not getting along, every effort to reconcile has failed, and now there's nothing but injustice from the side of the husband, then at such a time, whether it's Ramadan or Eid day, it becomes necessary to free the woman from any kind of zulm. Then it is necessary, because Allah Ta'ala does not tolerate zulm. As you heard the Hadith Sharif, dua of three people are never rejected, the fasting person until he makes iftar. Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala does not reject that person's dua. And one of the persons whose dua is not rejected is the mazloom, the person on whom injustice is done. Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala causes the dua of that person upon whom injustice is done to be raised above the clouds. The doors of heaven are opened. And Allah Ta'ala says, I will definitely accept your dua and help you, even though it may be after some time. But there are so many other ahadith and so many ayat of the Quran Sharif on zulm. So if the marriage has failed, there is no way that the person can sustain that marriage, then don't trouble that wife. There are many people who will say that, there are people who tell us this. And yet they know they have done great injustice and there is no way that they can stay together. The marriage has irretrievably broken down. The husband is not even coming home. They are living separate lives. But just to trouble the wife, they say, Maulana, one thing I don't want to do ever in my life is cause the arsh of Allah to shake. Because I heard that talaq shakes the arsh of Allah. And all the zulm you did, that didn't shake the arsh of Allah Ta'ala. All the injustice didn't shake the arsh of Allah Ta'ala. Whether it is from the husband's side or the wife's side. Sometimes the wives are doing injustice. They have got arrogance, pride, that we come from a certain family, we come from a certain background. We've got wealth, we've got property, we've got this, we've got that. So sometimes the injustice can be from the wife's side too. In any case, the talaq is in the hands of the husband. So if there is no hope of reconciliation, nothing at all, then we don't say that it is haram to give talaq in the month of Ramadan. But what I was saying is this, that in the month of Ramadan, Allah Ta'ala has opened the doors of maghfirat. So both parties should try and change heart. Get to the cause, get to the root. Find out what is the problem. What is it that is creating all this friction and division and dislike and hatred? Most of the time it is nothing but our sins. And because of our sins, Allah Ta'ala takes out the muhabbat from the heart of the husband for the wife and from the heart of the wife for the husband. Nigahe aqreba badli mizaje dosta badla, nazar ek unki kya badli ke kul sara jahan badla. Everybody around changes after it. Hatred builds up, anger builds up. So the answer to the question of that brother is simple. They try for reconciliation, but if it has been tried and there is no hope of reconciliation and there is nothing more that is happening except injustice, and you want to trouble the wife, you don't want her to enjoy a happy Eid with the family or whatever it may be. Some people say, I'll let her get old, but I'll never give her talaq. Let her die. Now, if we think that we are getting away with those statements, when Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala tightens the noose, then see what happens. Then Allah Ta'ala puts them through such suffering that then they cry for that same wife after that. So it's a month of Ramadan. Seek forgiveness. Don't feel ashamed to ask the wives for forgiveness. And the wife should not feel ashamed to tell the husbands, we are sorry, whatever we have done up till now, which may have violated your right and trampled upon your toes, then make us maaf. Cost nothing. But at least Allah Ta'ala will get happy and pleased. And then you will notice the changes too that will come in that marriage. But until both parties are arrogant, they don't want to ask for maaf. If one person says that if I have to ask for maaf by my wife, then after that she will rule over me. She will become dominant. Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala must give us hidayat. Yes, the wife does have that right, that if she believes that injustice has been done to her and she is not getting any joy from the husband, he does not want to separate, he does not want to give her the talaq, and there's no way that she can even live with him because the problems have gone so deep, rooted, that there is no way they can live together. So then she can apply to a judicial committee of one of the jamiyats and give her case, whatever injustice has been done. Then the committee also just can't read the letter and give one letter of talaq. In some places that is what happens. The committees have been formed. They are not ulama. And they just take one letter that has come from the wife and they just write one letter of talaq. Now that is not talaq. If somebody has to marry that woman after the iddat, that nikah will not be valid. They have to give the opportunity to the husband to defend. And if it is the other, and when they both are there and they present their cases, after having listened to both sides, and if the committee is satisfied that there is a ground for divorce or the great injustice has been done, so then they must ask the husband, give a talaq and separate nicely, why go on like this? But if he does not, then they have the Islamic right within the laws that are there in the books of jurisprudence to annul the marriage. Islam does not want people to live in the home like piece of furniture. The wife is not a piece of furniture like a chair you just throw here, throw there, or a carpet that you keep moving, or a doormat. The purpose of nikah is happiness, unity. If everything has failed and injustice is being done, then they have a right to annul the marriage. But once again, it must be people of authority, people who know the Quran and the Sunnah and jurisprudence, not just anybody. One more question we'll take and chutti for the day. If we have to go on replying to many questions, we can carry on till the evening too. But we said 45 minutes, we want to finish up in 45 minutes. Ji. The same what I replied earlier on, that there are many, many organizations certifying halal. So use your discretion, find out from the people about the integrity of the organization. If you are satisfied that the organization has got integrity, it is not violating any laws of Sharia, Quran and Sunnah, the certification is within the parameters of Sharia, and there are ulama and muftis who are guiding and directing, so then follow them. Eat the products which they declare halal, even though it may be two or three organizations. We don't say that if one has said it is halal, then definitely it is haram what the others are saying. There can be one product that has been certified halal by one, and not another organization is not too happy with that certification or considering that particular product as halal, but we have confidence in the organization which has certified it halal, then for your purposes it is sufficient. That's all. Otherwise it's the same thing, you'll end up with big fights and arguments. If Sanha has certified something, Knight has certified something, MJC has certified something, and you are satisfied yourself that product that has been certified is indeed halal because of the procedures that were adopted, the inspection that was undertaken, so then you can accept it. People go to Makkah, Madina, Sharif and they say all chicken here are haram. I tell them, how can all chicken in Makkah, Madina, Sharif be haram? We must be very careful what statements we make. Because sometimes we don't know. Those chicken that are coming from the outside, it's good that we must exercise caution for ourselves, that we don't eat because they are coming from the outside. We don't know in Denmark what they did and what they did in other places. So exercise caution. We won't die without eating that chicken. And now we get so much of that tazad chicken and others which are halal, eat them. But at the same time, don't say that all the hajis that have come here are all eating haram. That is a very, very wild statement. Some years back, when there was apartheid here, and when products of South Africa could not be exported directly to Saudi Arabia, so at that time they were using Maputo, they were using Swaziland, they were using other places, and those chicken were from Rainbow, but they used to have kind of a marking that sealed and packed in Maputo, sealed and packed here, sealed and packed there, but it was the same thing. It wasn't even going outside. From there they were exporting, and it was going to Saudi Arabia and going to other parts of the world. I happened to go into one supermarket there in Madina Sharif, in Makkah Sharif, in those days, I don't know whether it exists now. It was called Nuri's Supermarket. And in the freezer there, I saw chicken, protea chicken. It was marked protea chicken. And it was packed in Swaziland. So it made me a little excited that here's some chicken that's coming from Swaziland. So when I returned and made some investigation, I was told that it is rainbow chicken, slaughtered halal, packaged halal, but to avoid getting caught out that is coming from South Africa, so they were using this as a camouflage. Now whatever the issue may have been, but technically that chicken was halal, technically. That's a different question now, that whether we should accept a thing like that or don't accept. But technically it was halal. It was slaughtered in the Islamic manner. Bismillah, Allahu Akbar was read. It was sealed and packed. There was no contamination. So technically it was halal. Now those people who were eating that chicken, if somebody had to just say that you are eating haram, then it was not haram. It was halal. But we were not aware of the whole process or how it came, where it came from. So therefore we should not run to conclusion and say everybody that is eating in Makkah, Madinah, so everything is haram. What we must say is that exercise caution. Don't accept those chicken which are coming from the outside countries, because we don't know whether they were slaughtered properly or not. So for ourselves we exercise caution. Whether it is halal or not, where are we going to go and start making the investigation? So we must have a kind of a tolerance. It doesn't mean we must tolerate haram. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that if there are four organizations, five organizations, and everyone claims that a certain product which they have marketed as halal is halal, so then we must do the same thing, that choose the one that we have confidence and trust on, and then accept it. Finish. It's a time of fitnas now. Little things create big fitnas, and we must stay away from fitnas. Shariat is very beautiful. Inshallah, if it is certified by one of our reputable organizations, then it should be halal. But to the best of my knowledge, when we were going and inspecting those days, it was halal. And yet we used to get reports that there is a tape recorder that is playing there, Bismillah, Allahu Akbar, and they're cutting. We're going every day and checking there, we're standing by the slaughterers, we're seeing them slaughtering, see them reading, or listen to them reading, or see their lips moving, and yet they were, when a slaughterer is fired for some reason, then he comes out and makes a story. So some of the reports that we used to hear, it makes you laugh. And they were saying there's a tape recorder there that is slaughtered. Then somebody else came out with something else. So that's why we must be very careful with what statements people make. The slaughterers there were told those days, and it is up till now, I'm sure, I swear in the name of Allah that every chicken that I slaughter, I will recite Bismillah, Allahu Akbar. Now if a Muslim is telling you that he will read Bismillah, Allahu Akbar and slaughter, and he's even writing it and signing it, so after that if you still have doubt, then don't eat it, but don't declare it haram. Then somebody said, it's impossible, how can they slaughter so many thousand in such a limited amount of time? So now they were imagining that every chicken they catch, then they put the leg on it, and then they take the knife, and Bismillah, Allahu Akbar. Now like that it takes half an hour for slaughtering one chicken. But they don't know what system is operating there. So it's all due to our lack of knowledge, or our nafs. But there are lots of people who are just passing things through which are not halal. And so many things that were discovered. So then we can't accept all that. May Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala give us the tawfiq to eat that which is halal and stay away from haram, and save us from fitnas and mischief and corruption. Rabbana atina fid dunya hasanatan wa fil akhirati hasanatan wa qina azab an-nar. يا رحيم يا كريم يا ستار العيوب غفار الذنوب الله. ہم مجرم ہے، خطا کار ہے، گنہ گار ہے، سیاہ کار ہے، بدکار ہے. My beloved Allah, we are living in a time of fitnas. Fitnas are pouring, my beloved Allah, just as rain pours from the skies. Which way do we turn, my beloved Allah? Who else can protect us from fitnas besides you? Ya Allah, keep us in the shade of your rahmat and your mercy. Ya Allah, protect us from all fitnas. Fitnas are lashing at us from our right and from our left, from in front of us and behind us, pouring from the satellites above us. Ya Allah, hamari hifazat farma. Ya Allah, bless us with iman and yaqeen. Ya Allah, bless us with tawakkul and trust in you. Give us the tawfiq to read the Quran Sharif, understand the Quran Sharif, to make amal on the Quran Sharif and the Sunnah of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. Ya Allah, let not even a morsel of haram go down our throats. Ya Allah, let not even one rand of haram come into our earnings. Ya Allah, protect us from any kind of haram coming into our home or our system. Ya Allah, bless us with nothing but 100% halal. ہمیں 100% حلال رزق عطا فرما. My beloved Allah, forgive our major sins, minor sins, sins that we committed knowingly, unknowingly in the light of day or darkness of nights. Those who are sick and ailing, give them complete shifa from all sicknesses, ailments and diseases. Ya Allah, whether they are in hospitals, clinics or homes or amongst us, bless them with complete shifa from all sicknesses and diseases. Our hearts also, Ya Allah, we are spiritually sick. Clean and purify our hearts of malice, of greed, of pride, of arrogance, envy and jealousy. Unite the hearts of husbands and wives, parents and children. Unite the hearts of family members. Unite the hearts of the Ummah of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam. Ya Allah, bless us with the best of dunya, the best of akhirat. Bless us with the best of dunya, the best of akhirat. Bless us with all the goodness that Rasulullah Paak sallallahu alayhi wa sallam asked for us. Bless the ummat with that goodness. And from all the mischief, corruption and fitnas that he asked for protection, protect us and the ummat of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Rabbana taqabbal minna innaka antas sami'ul alim wa tub alayna إنك أنت التواب الرحيم وصلى الله تعالى على خير خلقه سيدنا ونبينا وشفيعنا ومولانا محمد وآله وأصحابه أجمعين برحمتك يا أرحم الراحمين.